watch me cry. Stand up on mighty Priam and say you rise.
Well, shalom and welcome to Foundations for Life with Mike Clayton, myself, Barry Phillips. We're delighted to have you along for the next 2 hours. And it is our hope, ambition to clarify, give insight to, or find the reality of the kingdom in Shoftim, beginning in Devarim, Deuteronomy chapter 16, verse 18. Mike, how in the world are things in North Carolina? And welcome home.
Thank you. Got in Monday night. 800 miles on Monday, and it was the night before. It'd been kind of interesting. After I got finished with the tabernacle teaching on Shabbat in Georgetown, Texas, it began to do something they had not seen there in Texas for a long time, and that's rain. I'm not saying that I brought it in, but it started raining. They were happy. And it did not stop. I hit the border, and it was still raining. It was an absolute wow, amazing. But traffic was rough, and I got in, then got up the next morning, 800 miles in. So I'm still a little bit on recovery mode, but just rejoicing in a great weekend. I was thinking about when we as we came in there, the song that brought us in before you, of course, during the Hebrew Nation Radio. What a powerful name it is. And that song that's one of those songs that gets in my head.
But
more than a song that, I don't know what this has to do with anything, but maybe somebody needs to hear it. I've changed up in my tabernacle teaching, I've changed up all of the music. Not that I have anything against Paul Wilbur, but I've kind of moved over into some songs that are maybe not Jewish in nature, but have some incredible meaning. And one of the songs that I've begun that walk through is an old Phillips Craig and Dean song. The only time I ever saw him run is when he ran to me, took me in his arms, held me tight and said, "Son, welcome home." You know, we're looking
at kind of get you on it.
Yeah, we're looking at the kingdom. we're looking at these words of Devarim. Moshe is within 40 days of walking up onto the mountain, and the children of Israel, the Hebrews, those that have been prodigals, if we could say, many of them kind of prodigals in Egypt and making their way back home. Barry, was there an excitement in the heavenly realm? With every step they made closer and closer to home, the excitement in the heavenly realm. And could we not be experiencing some of that today? That there is an excitement in the heavenly realm as people are turning to him. People are repenting, turning, finding where home really is, and the welcome home.
As you're describing that, I'm thinking of the opposite side of things, Mike, in that Hasatan, when he realized that he could not stir up enough trouble among the house of Israel, the Am Israel in particular, in their journey to self-destruct, then he raised up adversaries for them out of the land to resist them every step of the way. We have been on this journey for the last several years where among ourselves we are trying to self-destruct to some degree. That's improving as we learn to get some tolerance and some opportunity for diverse beliefs. But we have not resisted unto blood yet.
Yeah.
So there's a whole nother means of adversary waiting us at some point when we began to make, once we defeat this current issue, there will be another one. And it won't be from among us. It'll be outside of ourselves. Mm-hmm. And we may find some persecution beginning to start. So it's going to be a wonderful ride, guys.
Yeah, you didn't have a chance to read my commentary this morning because it hasn't gone out yet. But I talked about how in Yochanan chapter 19, how the every force of the every demonic presence and force at the time of Yeshua, there was no leave of absence during those days. There was no sick leaves. There was nothing. Everyone hands on deck because of the events that were happening. And I think today we're seeing some of those same things happen right now with people, in that demonic forces are seen. You know, as Moshe is speaking to the people, what's happening in Jericho right now? You know, as Moshe is giving these words, the people of Jericho are looking across and seeing this group of people that is about to enter into their land. And Rahab would say, the whole nation's and our whole city's in fear of you. You know, fearful people do some pretty
interesting,
you know, fearful people, as I've heard you say, desperate people will become desperate. A person in fear will become desperate. You ever corner an animal, you corner a dog that would never bite anybody, that dog will bite someone.
Oh yeah.
Because it's about fear.
And we're seeing that in our own society now.
We're seeing that in our society. We're seeing that in families. I just received an email from someone, and I normally would not open an email while we're talking, but a person is going through a difficult situation once again, and somebody that I know very well. I'll just go ahead, because he's allowed us to be on the program. Mark Smith of Messianic Lamb. Got some things happening right now. And so if people have a chance, just stop and pray that the Almighty will give Mark, Adina, favor, Ratzon. They would have his shalom, have his wisdom and counsel to walk through all these things that they're going through. And this is not just Mark or Adina. It's across the board, Barry, because the demonic forces are being forced into a corner right now. So let's not be surprised when they begin to pounce. But hanging on to the word, greater is he who is in me. Greater is he who is in us than he is in the world. Because I believe that as the demonic forces come forth, that his power is going to come forth in greater measure also.
As we consider these things, Mike, we kind of go over to where we want to begin in our Torah portion here. I kind of caught you off guard, and as a talking point here, is a little strange intro, but folks, hear this thought out. Man has often looked for the ideal society. I mean, every version of social order, whether it be democracy, capitalism, socialism, totalitarianism, whatever version of life and social structure has been tried, the effort is to improve what was before. And I'm sure that among the people of Israel, as they're journeying toward the final steps of reaching their inherited goal, They're imagining how much better it's going to be once they cross over.
Yeah.
No more tents. Maybe we can build a house. We can grab a house.
Hey, yeah, live in a house we haven't built. Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, you know, so, I mean, you know, life could be better here. The problem with this idea of utopia, you know, everybody... Why can't we just, you know, me and my friends get on an island and just set up a separate thing from the rest of the world, start our own country? I mean, when we was kids, we used to imagine starting our own country. What would we do? And we would think of the laws that we wouldn't have. Well, no one would tell us that we couldn't have cookies before dinner and none of that kind of thing. You know, it was all of these things. But whenever man has tried to do that, the problem is that the social structure always degenerates to the lowest of ourselves. Mm-hmm. There's always somebody who's going to try to mess things up. Then you have the guys that are the super intellectuals. We're just too evolved. We're too blue blooded. We're just above all of that freight. No, they're the same animalistic nature. They just are more sneaky mm-hmm. about the way that they coerce and control. Matter of fact, oftentimes we find that they want to control the mob and feel that they're entitled to do so because of their esteemed wisdom. Both of those piles of human mongrels are eating fruit out of the same tree.
Yeah.
The tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Man wants to decide for himself what's right and wrong. Enter Yah with the universe constructed out of the Torah commands, even the letters of the Torah, the alphabet.
Mm-hmm.
Yah has constructed the idealistic, the most perfect social structure and order ever known to mankind. But you would think, you know, it's kind of the idealism that when we saw the Torah as being legitimate, sitting in a Sunday school class or a church pew somewhere, and the light bulb went on, we thought, you know, if I could just get back to Shabbat,
mm-hmm.
it'll fix everything. No, it operates in a whole new set of issues and problems. You're going to have just studying and applying the Torah to the best of our ability doesn't fix things. As Moshe commands here in the opening of this, we need individuals called and selected who walk a very esteemed, righteous lifestyle to help us. And as Americans, we don't like that. We're individualistically minded. We're that independent streak on our back is about a year wide. And, you know, rugged, just get out of my way and I will do this myself. We don't want someone standing up front and saying, but this is the way you have to do it. You know, couple of weeks ago, Rico Cortez was demonstrating the traditional Shabbat service. You offer this prayer, and then you say this, and then you bend the knee, and then you, yada. And after a while, I was thinking, this is all wonderful, warm, and fuzzy, but I don't want anybody trying to tell me what I have to do on Shabbat. I know I was the only one in that room that had that thought going in my mind.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that, Barry. You were the only backslidden heathen in the room. But, you know, and we're not trying to say that what Rico, I respect how Rico does things.
Oh, absolutely. And I respect absolutely.
The research that's gone into that. So we're not trying to say, I don't think you're trying to say that what Rico has presented is the perfection of anything, though, or is it, you know, the opposite of that? It is what he's researched out.
But the I'm simple just being fact, transparent. Yeah, that's what went through my mind.
Yeah, the simple fact is, wait a minute, but this is not how I have been doing it.
Right.
And it is the... Okay, let's go with this thing. You got me started now in this utopia thing. The greatest utopia possible would be based upon Torah principles. Okay, and this is why you cannot have anything close to utopia without the scripture. What has made America great in the past is Judean Christian beliefs, whether those are skewed in some ways, but it had a basis. The Constitution's not perfect. We have people that have been raised up that are not perfect. And today there's a departure from the very words of Scripture at a very high, high rate of speed. But with that being said, if you and I, let's take a group of people and let's put together a utopian community with the great understanding that we have of the Torah, it's not going to be everlasting because it is brought together by men. The greatest that man can have, the greatest that man can achieve is only temporary. To think that there is going to be a utopian, you know, it's, I graduated in 1976, the 200th anniversary of the birth of the country.
And you're old.
Huh?
Sorry.
Yeah,
you're
I got
old.
A, I even get, yeah, I know. And I even get a belt buckle that says I did that. But, you know, people were saying no civilization has lasted this long. We're now into, you know, 200 plus by what, 240 or something like that. And, you know, no civilization has ever lasted this long. Why? Because this is really the first civilization outside of Israel that was based more on his word. But yet, look at where we're going and going very fast. To say that there's going to be a kingdom that is going to be perfect from day one to the end of day whatever in or day 365 in year 1000. That can only be reached by Messiah himself.
Right.
That can only be done when Messiah is seated. So the greatest thing that we can do on this side is going to pale in comparison to what he will do on that side.
So Yom presents truth to us.
Mm-hmm.
The Torah is truth. Can you imagine a society where lies do not figure in the foundation? You know, we were all upset when we began to realize the church fathers had doctrines that were contrary to Scripture. And we got all upset when we found that we had been given feast days, holidays that were in many respects contrary to Scripture. Then we learn American history is not as white picket fenced as we might think. There were some devious things that took place. Just as the first Native American that you come to,
yeah,
and they can help you to understand. We have not always been a very righteous nation. Still aren't in a lot of degrees.
Oh.
The secret, you know, we're all fussing about Russia trying to interfere with our elections. Did we never stop to ask, have we ever tried to interfere in Russian elections? Well, you
or
know
Israeli.
We have. Or Israeli elections, yeah, as in, you know, the previous administration. Yeah. We've had our dirty, grubby hands in other people's business for who knows how long. But Torah requires a foundation of truth. Man doesn't like truth. We would rather have our version, our preferred perspective, and slanted truth that kind of gives preferential treatment to ourselves. In 2 Thessalonians 2, though, the scripture says that the coming of the lawless one is with deceits and lying signs and wonders. If you don't have a society, a social structure, a Torah congregation, a family structure in your home that is based on absolute truth, and you allow the slanted views of your version of truth to come in there, when the lawless one comes in, you won't recognize what's going on. Nothing reveals a lie like the truth.
Yeah, and for that, we need people that will judge correctly. We need prophets. We're going to talk about all this as we continue through the show. I thought I was going to have to disagree with you there for a moment, but you pulled it back out, Barry. You said that man does not like truth. I would like you to consider, and you kind of brought this out, man loves truth, his own truth.
Yes.
Is the greatest enemy of truth the belief that I'm right?
Oh, yeah, the boat's leaking. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this is a thought that I had in some windshield time coming back from my recent week, that the greatest enemy of truth, when you look at somebody and there is truth that you're speaking, but they've already come to the conclusion that they're right. And the reason that they're right is because they're surrounded by other people who have the same concept of right that they do. And that, and this is, you know, to go from here and make myself seem, you know, really arrogant and wonderful and God's gift to God, let me say where this has led me to, that it has led me to a place of wondering if my truth that I'm walking in today is no more than what I have based upon I've surrounded myself with some people that have my same truth.
Well, is it not true also, Mike, that we get to a comfortable place of the truth that we're willing to accept, and then we stop the pursuit of it?
Yeah, yeah, because, you know, we can reach a place of blessing, and because it appears that I'm being blessed at this level, then I must be walking in truth, to where we can, you know, there's a place of becoming satisfied. This Torah portion, when it talks about, you know, setting up judges, of making sure there's no false prophets, of following the prophet that is in line with the Torah, of, you know, there being two or three witnesses. What is this doing? This is at all times challenging my truth. Are we willing to allow our truth to be challenged so that we can walk in a greater truth? See,
so go ahead.
The thought of, and we're running out of time, the thought of our father's inherited lies and falsehoods, that's become something that people get angry about. Okay, they passed on lies. No, we can actually look at it this way. They passed on their truth, what they thought was true. There was not a single Sunday school teacher in my Southern Baptist church in Jacksonville, Florida, that was lying to me. Not a single one. If they had, I don't know what they would have done. They wouldn't know how to handle it. They were passing on their version of truth. Their version of truth has allowed me to see today, I believe, a greater, more accurate version of truth. But now, are we going to stop here? Go ahead.
So these people who help us to determine what truth is, they are required to do so without recognizing who we are. In other words, they're not going to soften the blow or the reality of truth because of recognizing your or my face, or because someone's social status, whether they're rich, whether they're poor, whether they're bond or free. Rav Shaul wrote about that. You know, it doesn't matter what your social status or life situation is. The same truth applies to everybody. There's one Torah for the native born and for the sojourner, the ger, who walks among you. And when someone stands and gives the truth, whether it be someone teaching, whether it be someone trying to cancel or reprove or rebuke, give guidance to a local assembly, we have to be willing to do that without recognizing people's faces and saying, well, because it's Mike or it's Barry, we're going to, you know, make it easy on them. Mm-hmm. We're going to soften the blow, or we're going to make it harder on them. Maybe that's not the way they're thinking, but we'd like to color the truth according to our desire, especially, you know, this might be most applied in the individual home. Because I like to fudge a little bit here and there. I'm not going to say a whole lot to my kids. We should understand that the liberties of one generation are often expanded in the second and those beyond. Ooh. The disciplines that we install are also followed. Do we want liberties or disciplines for our children and grandchildren?
And that's the essence of becoming, you know, in our homes, we have to be that microcosm of the home. It's where everything begins, of taking these Torah portions, instilling them into our home, and then it going into the communities, and then impacting the kingdom.
watch me cry. Stand up on Mighty Friam and say you rise.
Welcome back to Foundations for Life with Barry Phillips, Mike Clayton. And Barry, before we get back into this, I do have an announcement. I got somebody in that was trying to put together an Israel tour for the end of February and into March. They were not able to come up with enough people out of their community. Have asked Hanok and myself if we could possibly help out. So if anyone is interested in a Connect to Israel tour, it will be our very similar to our standard tour. Of course, that always changes. They need to just send me an email and go to my website, go to wherever you get my email, and send me an email, ask about it, and I'll get all the information. We need about 10 people, 7 to 10 people. So anybody want to go in February, March, we'll see what we can do.
And that's a great time of the year to go. It's not too hot, not too cold.
Yeah.
It's very, very agreeable.
Yeah, you start to see about that time of the year, the almonds are blooming up in the mountains. The flowers are starting to come out up on the Golan, the Galilee. It's a gorgeous time. It really, really is. So, Barry, they were told to require judges, officers that would administrate the kingdom. It was to be, Israel was to be, when they entered into the borders of Israel, they were to establish the rule of Torah. And to the best of their abilities, they were to be a light, the light of the nations, so that the nations could literally stream to Israel and see what righteousness would look like. It was back to, I think that this is what the Garden of Eden, Gan Eden, was. It was to be a place of an opportunity that men and women could come and see what righteousness is, truly is. Today, it'd be hard to find. It'd be hard to find a place that you could point someone to that says, if you want an accurate depiction of what righteousness is, go there. Could you send a person to Israel for that today?
Well, I'm sure that there are some areas that they strive for. You know, I'm thinking of Itamar. Mm-hmm. Is it's a beautiful place. It's a significant place. The goldsmiths who lead that community in a lot of ways, they're great people, but they're people. They're human beings. They're bound to be issues. I mean, but there is not a perfect place. How many times have we heard people? Well, I was going to that church, and then the devil got in there and messed it all up. And then I went over here, and somebody did something. There's always something that's going to mess up your pie in the sky revelation. It's not going to be perfect in the earth, but that doesn't mean you stop. You have to keep trying.
I mean, could somebody, if they wanted to find the perfect righteousness on this earth, go to House of David in Gloucester?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure.
They could look there. I doubt they'd find it there, but they could look.
But what could they find? They could find a people who are searching for that righteousness. Sure. I think that today in where we have in churches, congregations, religious activity of all kinds of things, that there needs to be at least a place that you could say, I may not agree with everything that's going on there. I know those people have some problems, but that's a group of people that's seeking for Yah. They're searching for Him. I mean, that would be an awesome thing to just be able to be a part of a group in which everyone in the room is seeking for Him and not concerned about their own selves.
Well, I can tell you over the, 16 years of House of David existing, there have been folks that got disgruntled and left over one issue or another. Sometimes they actually come back and fit back in. There have been times that I, as a leader, have had to apologize. There are times that I made the right decision, and then there have been times that I didn't. That all being said, the goal is to reach such a state as that people can come and walk with us and grow and get somewhere. No one's life is perfect enough on a consistent basis to where, you know, just do like I say and everything will be fine. No, we all have our own life experiences. Here in the Torah portion, it mentions appoint judges and officers within all your gates. Gates being a place of legal jurisprudence, a place where the elders sit. The Proverbs 31 woman, her husband sits in the gate. The idea is that's a place of authority. Yeshua in Matthew 16 looked at these men that were following and said, I give to you the keys of the kingdom. The keys to the kingdom, do they fit the gate? Whoever sits in the gate is to be a guardian of the gate, a protector of the gate. For that gate to open, the gate to righteous application, making halakhic decisions for a group of people. Yeshua said that where two or three of you are gathered in my name, my character, my honor, my authority, I will be there with you. And if you loose, I will agree with you. If you bind, I will agree with you. I am there in the middle of you. Yeshua is here to help us. But Mike, we're often very timid about making such decisions, lest we be branded as being legalized or legalizers. Mm-hmm. But Yeshua has given us keys. Now, obviously, one of the first and main keys is that we walk righteously. Certainly, if I'm not trying to walk righteously, I have no business trying to help anyone else do the same. But if I am making every effort that I know to have a righteous life and a righteous home, that gives me standing where I can look at someone else and say, what you're doing is unrighteousness. The way you're walking, your choices here do not reflect the character of Yeshua, and we need to address these. Can I help you? Sometimes I need to get my elders together. We had a situation some years ago where an individual refused all of our counsel.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I pulled together knowledgeable people concerning their situation, and we sat down calmly. No one yelled, no one screamed, no one got red-faced or angry. We calmly talked to them and tried to help them to understand, look, this activity is wrong. It's immoral. It's got consequences. If you want to remain among us, then this is what needs to be done. And here are some things that we would highly encourage you to do. And they were all embracing. Very shortly thereafter, they took all of that, threw it out the window, and went and did exactly what we asked them not to do. Mm-hmm. Then when they showed back up some weeks, months later down the road, consequences all for everyone to see, I had to ask them, you need to leave. What? How could you rejected all of our counsel? You rejected mm-hmm. all of our authority. You thumbed your nose at everything that we said. You went and did what you want, and now you're going to come back in here and act like nothing has happened. No, go back home, and if you're willing to talk to me and try to figure this out, call me. That was hard to do.
Yeah,
but I mean that's walking in the authority of the gate. You have to do those things.
Yeah, because the opposite is true, that everybody's just, you know, let's just open the church doors and let's let everybody in. Well, you know, that does not line up with the culture of that day. We see officers, judges, we see that these specific cities are to be in place, and that there's to be authority. When you're talking about the keys to the kingdom, I will give you the keys to the kingdom. What is the kingdom? The kingdom's his house. It's a representation of his house. It would be like me saying, Barry, I'm going to give you the keys to my house. Now, if I give you the keys to my house, then I'm giving you the right, the ability to enjoy anything that's in the house. If I give you the keys to my house, that means you have access to the refrigerator.
But it also means that as I conduct myself in your house, that I do so with a realization, this is not my house, it's his house, and treat it as he would have me to treat it.
Exactly. That if I give you the keys to my house, that when you enter into that door, it's actually this, Barry, if you've ever, you borrow a car from somebody. Once in a while, I've had to borrow a car from somebody. And when I do, I make sure that that car is cleaner. Now, you know that I like to keep my car clean. I mean, you know, you've ridden with me enough to know. You get out of the truck, take your trash. Don't leave tracks behind. It's just something that I do. But if I borrow somebody's car, and it's, you know, I try to leave it cleaner than when I borrowed it. I'll go back and normally we'll put more gas in it than when I started.
Right.
Because if I borrow something from somebody else, or I am put in authority of somebody's or something for someone, I should actually take greater care and respect for that than I would even for my own things. That's right. Showing honor to the person. And so when Yeshua says, I'm giving the keys to the kingdom, I'm giving you the authority to rule over, but are you going to do that? The reason that many people do not see in their hands the keys to the kingdom is because they've failed the test in taking the authority of their keys to their own house. If you can't rule your own house, if you can't properly administer the keys to your own house, why would you ever be given the keys to the kingdom?
Seemed like there's some, Rob Schulz said something about that. If you can't keep your family in order, you're not qualified to be an elder or an overseer in the body. So it sounds like leadership begins at home, and that doesn't mean running roughshod over your wife and children. Mm-hmm. That means if your wife or children, if your spouse and children benefit from your leadership and are happy to receive it, then you might be considered, not until.
You brought up the verse of Proverbs 31. We actually talked about this with Miriam Feinberg Pamash on the program on Monday on Remnant Road. And the thing about the husband being known in the gates, okay, is that he was respected enough. But why was he respected? The gate in, I live in Franklin. Okay, we have the Murphy Highway, which comes in from Murphy. We have the Highlands Highway that comes in from Highland. We have the Silva Highway that comes in from Silva. And we have the Bryson City Highway that comes in from Bryson City. There are four ways to get into this town, plus the back roads. But in that day, there was one gate. You didn't just come in anyway. If you tried to get into a city any other way than through the single gate, you were thought to be a thief and a robber. The same with the tabernacle. If you tried to get in any other way but through that gate in the front, you were thought of as a thief and a robber. So the gate is a place of protection. The gate is not is yes, it is a gate of entry, but it is first a gate of protection to keep people out before it's a gate to let people in.
It also would signify if I approach a city and I enter into the gate, then I willingly submit myself to the authority of those gatekeepers.
Exactly. So,
and I willingly say that I will abide by the rules of this city while I'm in this city, because I willingly walk through the gate to make entrance here. So,
and if someone comes into, they have to submit first of all to, and we're going to actually get to chapter 17 right now. They have to submit to the appointed judges, the appointed officers. If they submit to the rules and regulations and the authority of that city, but then they come in and do something that is contrary to those, which is, if it is found among you within any of your gates, that Yah, your Elohim, gives you a man or woman who does not see who is wicked, transgressing his covenant, having you serve other idols, what are you to do? They're to be put to death. Now, this is not, I mean, we live in a society today that you don't put somebody to death when they, you know, someone comes into a congregation and you find out that they are trying to drag people away into false doctrines. You don't shoot them. That will probably cause you to be on the evening news. And that's just a downhill slide from there. But what do you do?
That's what they make horse whips for.
Yeah. What do you do? The same door that let them in is the same door that will let them out. And you are, and the officers, the judges, the elders must make it clear to the person, as what you were describing earlier, what you have done is transgressed the laws and authority of this house. You will no longer be able to enter into that door again. You will be cut off from this house. You know, if someone comes to your house and, you know, you're sitting there, you find out later on that when they asked to go to the restroom, that they actually went down the hall and into one of your children's rooms and stole something. Are you going to let them back in the house the next time?
No.
I would hope not. I would hope not. If you give somebody the keys to your house and all of a sudden you come and find that all your jewelry and everything else is missing, you're probably not going to say, well, you know, how many nights are you going to stay? Are we willing to have that same response, that same integrity, that same tenacity with his house as we would with our house?
Mike, Endeavoring 4, it says, beginning of verse 5, see, I've taught you laws and right rulings as Yahweh my Elohim commanded me to do thus in the land where you go to possess. You shall guard and do them, for this is your wisdom, your understanding before the eyes of the peoples who hear all these laws, and they shall say, only a wise and understanding people is this great nation. Well, what great nation is there which has Elohim so near to it as Yahweh our Elohim is to us whenever we call on him? One who comes to walk in among us should recognize this is a preferred community. This is a better place than I have been previously. And they should want to conduct themselves in such a way as to be allowed to stay. Now, if they choose to reject that which makes the city, the community, the assembly, the family, the home desirable, then they are corrupting the stability of that gathering or that people. When a nation fails to have justice, when bribes and names and money, the ability of a lawyer is that which determines whether an outcome of a court is good or bad, instead of justice, people become disillusioned. If a man can't trust that justice would be found, then they say, how could Yah allow such a verdict to come against me? And they began to doubt what's true and what's not. That's when they began to turn to other versions of truth. You can have the best congregation ever, the most enjoyable congregation, study Torah, walk together, have feasts together, wonderful. And if something goes against you, something is determined against you and a reproof is given or even a rebuke, sometimes people get a burr under their saddle and they start stirring things up and they start turning from truth. Nothing will help you to down the road to deception like an offense. Man, that's the turbocharger to the road of deception. when we do that, we start turning around looking for something else. That's why Islam, you know, every Arab in the Middle East feels empowered by Islamic doctrine because it decrees them to be right and entitled to any and everything. The black empowerment gospel, those who carry racial offense from generations in the past or even something they think is current. When a pastor gets up in a pulpit and says, the white man has defrauded you and everything he's got, God's going to give it to you. Well, I mean, they feel empowered by that. So are the Wiccans. So are the Scientologists. Everybody has turned to their version of truth because they feel empowered. Well, Go ahead.
You talk about the black empowerment gospel. Let me just make sure I balance this one out a little bit. Is that this is what you're saying is not about a specific people only, because this empowerment gospel is being done in all kinds of different places. I mean, Yes. You know, you could talk about the whichever denomination empowerment gospel, that because we are this denomination, we are empowered over other denominations.
We used to sing in our denomination, the Church of God is right, hallelujah to the Lamb. We were right and everyone else is wrong.
Yeah, yeah. And so it had no room for anyone else except for those that look and act like you. Which, when we surround ourselves with only people that look like us, act like us, think like us, there's no way for us to grow. There's no way for us to grow in, here comes the word, relationship.
Right.
You know, all of these things you're talking about, there's no way to bring forth relationship with any of that. And this is what's happening. And Barry, I want to ask you, do you think that, you know, the political structure of today, to where this continual rant over these corrupt people at the FBI, I mean, you know, the FBI was known in most of our minds growing up, you know, like the FBI, they had no political agenda. Well, they were just out, you know, trying to get bad guys. They're after Bonnie and Clyde, you know, and Al Capone and all these people. Come to find out, this three-letter agency is as corrupt as they come. And so you look at the judicial system today, it's as corrupt as it comes. Congress, the Senate, the White House, across the board, the Catholic Church, what has just come out about this, and I talked about this on my program, my Living Torah program, to see, I mean, we sat there last night, me and Kathy watching the news, and they're talking about thousands of people coming forth in one state, Pennsylvania, one state, and saying they were abused by priests. All of this is causing people to say, what's the use? What's the use? There's no truth out there, so what's the use in even trying to find it?
Well, if man doesn't believe that Yah can and will defend him, then he say, I will defend myself.
Yeah.
That's where we began to develop a creed, a belief system that is, it caters to our particular need. And you know that my family and I have a less than desirable situation that has developed. And I've got a grandchild that looked at me the other night and said, I thought you prayed a certain prayer. And well, we did. Well, it didn't get answered. Is God real?
Talk about that during the break.
get to watch me cry. Stand up on mighty Priam and say you rise.
Welcome back to the third portion. Third portion already, Mike. Yeah. How in the world? Third portion of tonight's Foundation for Life. Mike and I are trying to get through chapter 17 because we've only got like four more chapters to go. Yeah. And we got a little ways to cover here. The idea is that not only are we to get rid of the idols that are in the midst of us, it says in verse 12, it talks about the man who acts arrogantly mm-hmm. and will not listen. How much easier is it to walk in the Torah if you have a teachable, humble attitude? If you're willing to be taught and you're willing to listen instead of thinking, I don't know why they're telling me that. I already got it all figured out. What they need to do is let me teach and not tell them how it really is.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen that within the last few weeks. I just kind of leave it at that.
Wait a minute. I was with you the last few weeks.
Yeah, I know. And I wasn't really talking about you.
Okay.
But, I've seen that. I've seen people that, they're sitting there because they have to. Their wife told them they have to be there. Their mom and dad told them, and they're not there to listen at all. But anytime you go somewhere, if you focus on those people, they'll kill you spiritually. The Torah is, I can't hardly imagine why a person that doesn't want to listen, that doesn't want to learn, that doesn't want to draw close to him, I can't hardly imagine why that person would even want to be involved to begin with. But I have a hard time thinking about the brilliant one in the garden was probably coiled up inside the tree of life to begin with. You know, it's from inside the Torah that somebody can lead someone into deception. So we have to be very careful.
Say that again, Mike.
It's from within the Torah that somebody can lead someone to deception.
We might need to pause and think about that for a minute.
I'm trying to find a good example without going to something kind of crazy. But there's been a lot of fringe teachings that have been done through the years. Most of those begin in truth. My pastor, what became a Vineyard Church after I left, my pastor was always very clear to teach me that everything has a grain of truth. Everything has a percentage of truth. There's nothing out there. Maybe if every rule has an exception, is there a rule that doesn't have an exception? I don't know. But, I mean, let's think about it. That every false doctrine began with truth distorted. The enemy came to Eve and said, did God really say? And then began this, bringing forth this this thing that would cause her to be deceived. I look at Mormonism today. I've picked on Mormonism because I feel that it is a great deception that is leading many people astray. Is there truth in Mormonism? Yes. But is that truth being used to deceive people into a lie? I believe so. And this is why we need to have prophets. We need to have those that are judges and officers. Now, in the midst of this whole thing, Barry, the nation of Israel is going to rise up and say, we're not willing to walk this out as he intended, that there would be judges and officers and prophets in our midst. We want to be like everybody else and have a king. Well, how did that really work out in the end? First of all, we start out with Saul. good and bad. Okay. Then it's turned over to David. Well, David's the man after Yah's own heart. But David had some problems too. Because as we were talking on the break, and I wasn't even thinking about Bathsheba there, really. You know, I think that that David's thing with Bathsheba was really, though it was wrong, that was probably the least of his the things that that he would his faults. Okay, not trying to I don't like to point my fingers at the people that are in the scripture, because with what measure of justice or judgment you give, you will also receive. So, but the Father put these men and women in the scripture, warts and all. Again, we talked about that on Monday together. David, as you and I were talking earlier during the break, that he was a mighty man of battle. Read Psalm 119, and where it says in there the word law, transpose the word Torah. Wow, it's just amazing. But David was not a real good family man, it doesn't appear. David's life, yeah, it has some, you know, conviction, because here we have in the Torah, it says the king. In the event you must appoint as king, the one whom Yah your Elohim will choose. You know, David's the second king to be appointed. Did he not pass on enough of that which he said he loved to his son? What do we see with Shlomo, Solomon, that he amassed for himself horses, gold, silver,
wives.
And wives?
Yep.
I mean, you know, I know that I'm reading in English, but I could probably pull up the Blue Letter Bible and find out that says in Hebrew, do not amass horses, gold, silver, and wives.
Probably.
I don't think it's a trick in the wording here. So this statement, when he comes to occupy the throne of his kingdom, he is to write a copy of this Torah for himself in a scroll. Did Saul ever do that? We don't know. Did David ever do that? We don't know. It's probable. I would probably lay more on that David did that, and that's what gave him this love for Torah, is when he began through his own pen to internalize the words. But then he didn't pass it on to his son. And because he didn't pass it on to his son, the wheels came off of Israel, and things started to go downhill really fast.
Well, you know, Solomon had the beginnings of a great and glorious kingdom. And as far as splendor goes, I mean, I don't know if there's ever been a wealthier nation with the amount of gold that he amassed. I don't know that there was a greater architectural achievement than what he accomplished, not just in building the temple, but in his palaces and his stables and his, there were a lot of great and positive things. But when he died, people were wore flat out and broke and tired. And his corruption fell into subsequent generations. To whom much is given, much is required. Mike, it's not how you start, it's how you finish. Really the most important thing.
These verses of chapter 17, verse 18 on to the end of the chapter have been some that I've taught on. I've worked on some of this through that, you know, writing the copy of the Torah. We have a mutual friend that actually did that. I know a few people that have done that. I've gotten about halfway through it myself. I haven't really picked it back up for quite some time. But, you know, this section of verses, I've got this circled here, but something that hit me this year that had not hit me in the previous years, I hadn't seen this one like I have this time, is in verse 20, that he is to write a copy of the Torah and to read it daily so that he will not think he is better than his kinsman. And it just, I heard the words so clearly, Torah will humble a king and exalt a servant.
Mm.
See, Torah places us literally on level ground.
Yes, it does.
It's, you know, the old adage, the foot of the cross is level. Okay, that's fine. But the foot of the execution stake is based upon the living Torah hanging upon that stake. And so to the king, when he reads the Torah, it should humble him. A leader, a judge, an officer, a prophet, a pastor, a teacher, when we read these wonderful words of the Torah, we read about the people, their lives of going through it with Abraham, Isaac, Jacob. When we turn into Leviticus and we see the heart of the Father, when we see the successes and the failures of the book of Numbers, the Torah should humble us. But at the same time, the person that is thought of as the lowliest, you know, the one that chops your wood and brings you the water,
yes,
they should see their worth within the Torah.
Yes, they should.
The Father is exalting them, bringing them into the family, even though they have what in most people's eyes is a very menial task upon this earth. When they do it under the king, it should exalt them.
Wise words there, Mike.
That's pretty good stuff, Barry.
Yeah. Chapter 18, can we dare say that we made it that far? Talks about the Levites having a right to eat from the altar. Mm-hmm. You know, this is more than just one class of individuals. This is the Levites eating from the altar because they served the altar, just like Adam was to eat from the fruit of the garden because he worked in the garden. Noah could eat meat from the animals because, well, he spent over about a year working among the animals. Those who sow the word should be able to live from the word. Doesn't say that you will be rich and extremely wealthy from it, but you should be able to eat from it.
Mm-hmm.
In the kingdom, whatever our labors are, whatever our assigned duties, whatever our portion land will require of us, from that, the kingdom should take care of us. Can we imagine a society on earth where people are given an opportunity with a piece of land or a home or an assigned job from the king, and it will be sufficient for all of their need? Now, you know, I don't imagine that everything is free in the kingdom. I imagine that there will be an economy where you see something you want, you buy it with whatever currency with the king's head or face or representation is upon it.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever, however the transaction, maybe it's all a barter system, I don't know. But I imagine that there would be an economic means of existence in that. But could it finally be that there would be no poor among us because everyone works? Imagine that. And for what they work and what they do, they actually have the ability to live.
So, you know, the reason there's no poor among us is because there's no lazy among us?
Because everyone's working.
Yeah, and everybody is working to build up each other, not suppress each other. There's a kingdom principle there for you, Barry, that in our employment today, we should be working to exalt others in the workplace, not hold them down and suppress them.
Well, do you imagine that in the kingdom that there will be athletes being paid enormous million-dollar settlement or sums of money for catching a ball or putting a ball in a certain goal or
I'm not really sure.
Bigger, stronger, and so forth than everyone else? I don't know that would be the case.
I'm not really sure that there's going to be a lot of sports in the kingdom. Well,
that's got to be football.
Yeah, right. Just keep on with that, Barry. because I think the kingdom's going to be about things that are significant.
Oh, well.
Folks, you don't know what I just...
Pilgrim, we need to talk about it.
There's a reason we're separated by 1,000 miles right now. I'd have never said that to his face. Barry Phillips is a great football fan. I don't mind that at all. But I'm not, so it doesn't make any difference to me. The thing is, with this, Barry, that people are going to be paid their worth for the job that they do, not for a perceived job. For their actual input into the kingdom, not in some kind of thing of building themselves up. Look at Hollywood. Look at politics. How many babies have been kissed by politicians just because a person wanted to get elected? They could care less about that child. They just want your money. They want the dollars. I know there's exceptions to this rule, but it's few and far between. I've even been around what I would call some of the most righteous politicians, and I've seen the antics that go on behind the scenes. Again, imagining in the kingdom, Barry, and this is what Israel is to be about. Let's get political and go to the Gaza situation today. Is anyone in Gaza, is the government of Israel trying to suppress Gaza, the residents of Gaza? If Mahmoud, whatever, Abbas, came to Bibi Netanyahu and said, instead of firing rockets, could you send a team in to help us build a hospital? How long would it take Israel to have those people there?
It would be almost immediate.
Yeah,
I mean, when we heard this week that there are individuals who are at the border picking up Palestinians, as they are called, to take them to Israeli hospitals for treatment of whatever their malady is, because it is so far from that border to local treatment that they can never get there without Israeli help. There are Israelis picking up their enemies and taking them to the hospital and bringing them back.
Mm-hmm. And the reason they're not dropping them off at the door of their house in Gaza is because there's a sign there that says, if you're an Israeli citizen, under possibility of death, do not enter into this, pass this sign through this checkpoint.
If that same sign was placed on the Israeli side, aimed at the Arab, you come in here, we'll shoot you. The world could not contain the outcry and the volume of it. But I have personally seen the sign that you're referencing, and it does exist. Huge red sign in bold white letters, easily seen in Arabic, in Hebrew, and in English. Mm-hmm. There it is.
Mm-hmm. So back to this is that the kingdom is going to be about a group of people that are not jealous of each other. Here's where the Levite, the problem could lie, in that a person would bring their offering unto Yah to the temple, and the Levite is then seen the next day eating a barbecue sandwich. And the guy says, wait a minute, that was of my flock. I'm the one that raised that animal. I'm the one that paid for the feed for that animal. I'm the one that protected that animal from any hazard. I raised that animal, and then I brought it to be given unto the Father, and this guy's eating it. What makes him think he can do that? That was my animal.
Yeah.
See, not understanding the purpose of the Levitical priesthood.
That reminds me of a situation I was in many years ago while pastoring. I went to a church to help a transition to a new pastor. And I was warned about an old man in the congregation that would probably try to cause me a problem. Sure enough, the old man stood up and he said, I want to know what's going to happen to all of our money that we put in this church. And I said, sir, the money that you put in this church is no longer your money. It's his money. It's Yah's money.
That and didn't go over well.
Well, I told him, I said, you and the rest of your congregation have selected men who will administrate that money under the Father's direction. And I'm sure that they do an excellent job. And everybody was smiling and nodding their head. And he sat there with his arms flung. But that's that principle is true, that what you give to Yah no longer is yours, it's his.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's well and good if you give him something, but it's still under your authority control. When Yah says, now turn that loose and put it under someone else's control, that can be a problem. We don't like to do that.
But what about when someone else is being blessed because of your work?
Well, I mean, we have to be willing to accept their blessing is equal to whatever value that we have otherwise.
Am I willing to work so that you, am I, Mike Clayton, willing to work so that Barry Phillips could be blessed?
Well, I would hope so, because that's what we do.
Exactly. You know? And so what are we doing here? This is a modeling of kingdom purposes, kingdom principles, that we're willing to, greater love has no man than he would lay down his life for his friend. Well, that maybe, you know, that maybe translates really cool on the battlefield when you step in front of a bullet. But am I willing to lay down and take some of my blessing and give away to you, or vice versa? Let's take just a teaching. You know, we've got a mutual friend in Snyder that we're really enjoying right now, some dialogue that's going back and forth between us. And I said, hey, I on the phone yesterday, I said to him, understand that anything you send to me or Barry is can be stolen immediately for a teaching. And he says, but see, that's the thing, is that God's giving it to me for other purposes than just me. He right. said it wasn't exactly in those words, but that was the thought behind it. When we understand that the Father gives us something, what we have in our lives is to bless somebody else. That's showing the kingdom on this earth.
Let's contrast that then, Mike, this portion for portion mindset of verse 8 in that chapter. In verse 9, it says that when you come into the land, do not learn to do according to the abominations of those nations. And it starts talking about divination and sorcery mm-hmm. and spells and
Harry Potter and horoscopes, yeah.
All of that is normally used for manipulation and control of someone else for your own personal benefit.
Mm-hmm.
The kingdom principle is, I have been entrusted with this gift, talent, or opportunity, this measure, in order to bless and encourage, edify, benefit not only myself, but someone else.
Mm-hmm.
Spiritists, those who are involved in the occult, it is about me and what I can control over someone else to benefit me. Yah calls that an abomination. This dog-eat-dog mindset, me getting mine and mine mm-hmm. first, and every man for himself, the survival of the fittest, that's not Yah. That's no. not his heart. That's an abomination in his eyes, and that's not the kingdom. And actually, what the kingdom might also include is the rest of this idea about the prophet. Next half hour, we'll be yeah. right back.
We're not sure if the kingdom's going to have music between the breaks, but we'll have to find out.
Thank you.
let the watchman cry. Stand up on mighty Ephraim and say you rise.
Welcome back to the final segment for tonight of Foundations for Life, or what I like to call 25 minutes before my supper time. I noticed that on the break, you're already at supper time.
No, I'm just sitting here in the office.
Sound like a spoon in a bowl now.
No, I had a piece of ice.
Okay, you had a piece of ice. My dog loves ice. Do you know what a deconstructed cabbage roll is?
A salad?
No, it's actually cooked. Kathy says deconstructed cabbage rolls. I called it cabbage soup.
Okay.
Yeah, it tastes exactly the same. You just don't have to cut it up as much.
All right.
I'll probably be getting the text within moments. Barry, get me out of here. Prove once again that stupidity. It's hard to stop stupid, and sometimes it hurts. Okay, here we go.
Yes.
Barry,
yes.
Let's talk about the prophets. I should be listening to one right now, which would tell you keep your mouth shut. Prophets. Will there be prophets during the millennial kingdom? False prophets?
Prophets, yes. I would think, because the ministry gifts are gifts to the body. I can imagine that there will still be heralds or evangelists. I know there will be shepherds and teachers in the kingdom. So I'm assuming that, you know, those of apostolic anointing and prophetic anointing will also be operating. A prophet is not just one, obviously, who foretells the future, but one who also proclaims the current reality and calls for a return to the Torah. Mm-hmm. So certainly there will be a need of prophets going throughout the earth and telling nations it's time to turn to the Torah. So I can see that. False prophets?
Okay, here's why I'm thinking this, because
interesting.
At the end of the 1,000 years, there will be those that will actually, when Hasatan is loosened from that pit at the end of the 1,000 years, he will move into people's lives in such a way that they will actually fight against the Almighty.
Prior to that?
So is it that those false prophets have been allowed to operate, maybe not within the borders of the kingdom, the borders of Israel, but have been allowed to operate in the world to test men's hearts? Because what is a false prophet anyway? A false prophet is allowed to prophesy falsely in order to test a man's heart.
Wow. I'm not doubting that what you're saying is plausible.
I that's all I'm doing is putting it forth as plausible.
Practical. I'm struggling on the practicality of Yah allowing that, but you know, he's done things without my permission or understanding before. So
yeah, within the last few minutes.
Probably.
Yeah, probably so. So, I mean, I see that, you know, the millennial kingdom is going to be about, there will not be a single person who is alive, raised, born during the millennial kingdom that can say, you know, I never knew what righteousness was all about. You can go to people today that have never gone to a church. I'm not getting into the doctrines, issues, and stuff, but there is a growing number, the millennials today, a growing number that have absolutely no use for anything inside of a church. Being, you know, atheism, secularism, all of these things. I can see that there would be a number of people today that could at least go, well, you know, I never really saw righteousness. I've told people before, especially, you know, even, well, even fairly recently, when I present to them the gospel, when I present to them the message of Yeshua, his death, his resurrection, when I present to someone the reasons for the Torah, that the Torah is not done away with, when I present to someone a scriptural evidence for biblical kosher, a scriptural evidence for Shabbat being on Shabbat and not another day, when I present those things, they're now without excuse. They can't say, I never knew. In the kingdom, right, in the millennium, in that 1,000 years, there will not be a single person that can stand at the end of it and say, I just didn't have any reference point. Because even Sukkot, which, it, you know, in Zechariah it says that all nations will come, will send a representative for Sukkot, but you don't celebrate Sukkot without celebrating Passover. So in the nations, the festivals, the cycles of righteousness are being preached. No one will be able to say, but I was on a deserted island after a 3-hour cruise, and I just never heard.
You know, that's an interesting concept, is that truth is going to prevail, and I started to say invade. It's not that it will be invade. It will encompass the entire earth, so that those in the furthest reaches of the Amazon or deserts or tucked away and some desolate location will still hear and understand the truth of the Torah. But you and I both know that you don't get the Torah and its full impact in one setting or even in a year's worth of setting.
No.
How much teaching is going to have to be given throughout the earth in order to teach men and women, families, societies, nations, how to walk in a manner pleasing to the Most High? They're going to have every question imaginable. It's going to take a while. And then maybe the kingdom is 1,000 years long because it takes that long to get the information out. Well, I don't know.
Okay, consider we're on, what, our 4th or 5th year? What are we coming up on? The end of our 4th year?
4th year, I believe.
Yeah, I think it's, I have all the archives. We're planning to do another year. 5 years. There would be people that would say, you've gone through the Torah every Wednesday night for 5 years, 2 hours? Really? What in the world? How can you bring out anything new? I got stuff right here. I've got 2 lines that I just underlined that I, you know, they were just right there today. Okay, what about 1,000 Torah cycles? And the 900,
we might begin to understand it.
And the 999th Torah cycle, given by the living Torah himself, is just as exciting as the first one. Sitting on the edge of your seat for 1,000 Torah cycles as the living Torah expounds on the written Torah.
Mm.
Yeah, that's a good...
I mean, just... And the knowledge of Yah will fill the earth.
Yes.
So much so that even the animal kingdom will be affected. The planetary bodies will be affected. The earth will no longer be groaning to be released from the curse. It will prevail to such a place that man will no longer fashion weapons of war, and war will cease on the earth. Mike, this is an interesting idea, just to sit and look out the window on for a long time.
Yeah, it's this concept. I think you started on it a few weeks ago. The verses, they're found in Isaiah 2. The Torah will go forth from Jerusalem, his word from Mount Zion. That's more than a cute song. That's more than a nice song. There is nothing that has ever happened upon this earth that will affect more realms than those verses.
Right.
You're right. It will affect the animal kingdom. It will affect nature itself. The creation that we look at, I don't like to use the word nature, the creation that we see out our windows as we stare at a lot. And we're getting, by the way, we're kind of getting known for that statement of hearing it from people. You know, to look out that window and understand that today it's groaning. What does that mean? I don't know. What does it mean for my garden to be groaning? It's not able to bring forth that which it really truly can. Mm. It's going to affect in some way planetary bodies, possibly even the rotation of the Earth. All of those things are going to be affected because of the Torah going forth from Jerusalem. The perfect order of society, the perfect kingdom.
Well, you just mentioned Jerusalem again. In chapter 19, it talks about establishing cities of refuge. Mm-hmm. And as the land increases, then the cities of refuge need to be further created. But is Jerusalem in the fact that the word of Yah will go forth from Jerusalem, Yerushalayim, not going to cause that city to become the ultimate city of refuge? The people can come and hear and listen and be taught, and it will provide for them a sense of guard, a sense of stability, a rescue. You know, the city of refuge is more than just a hiding place. The goal was that if a man accidentally took someone else's life, that by living within the walls of a city of refuge, that the wisdom within that city would teach him how to be a more constructive individual and someone more capable of caution or forethought, right planning, so that these accidents would not happen unnecessarily. Is that not what Jerusalem in that day will do for us, is establish right and righteous precedent for us to live by? You know, for all of our scientific and technology, technological achievements, for all of our advancement in the earth, man is still highly corruptible. I mean, just glance into the headlines recently where people abuse children, where people are teaching children how to murder. People, and there was a headline the other day. I couldn't even bear to read the story. I had to just glance beyond it. A man took the life of a girlfriend and ate her. And it's like, what is it that what level of depravity can come into a human being to actually perpetrate such things on the earth? Yeah. Do you think that for all of our heightened esteem and technology, we would be beyond all that? We're not, man. Oh, we are animals.
It's heading the other way. And of course, you know, we've quoted so many times, you cannot solve a spiritual problem with a political solution. It doesn't matter who you put in what office. You're not hearing that. You know, you're talking about going people coming to Jerusalem, a place of refuge. Of course, Yeshua stood and he spoke out of Isaiah when he said, "The Spirit of Yah is upon me because he has anointed me to preach the gospel to the poor." What's the gospel? It's the coming kingdom. He has sent me to heal the brokenhearted, to preach deliverance to the captives, recovering of sight to the blind, and set at liberty all that are bruised. But along with that, here's another reference to those same words in Psalm 147. How good it is to sing praises to our Elohim. How sweet, how fitting to praise him. Yahweh is rebuilding Yerushalayim, gathering the dispersed from Israel. He heals the brokenhearted and binds up their wounds. He determines how many stars there are and calls them by name.
Mm.
That's a kingdom verse here of when the word of the Torah goes forth from Jerusalem, he will draw the brokenhearted unto him and show them what worth they have in his sight. That if he was willing to even name each and every star and give it worth, he will show them how much worth they have. And that's something, yes, that we should be receiving today, Barry, as we're preparing for this kingdom. We should be receiving that worth that he is calling us. He's bringing us forth as a people. He is literally gathering the dispersed of Israel, that we should be singing praise, adoration, thanksgiving unto him, because the work that he's doing in our midst to establish and bring forth the kingdom, and he's desiring to have us involved in it. Wow, that's pretty cool.
That's pretty overwhelming.
Yeah, I think overwhelming is a better word there.
So, in chapter 20, Mike, he talks about, the word talks about going out to battle against your enemies. Mm-hmm. But we just described that in the kingdom, there won't be man learning warfare anymore. They'll turn their swords into pruning hooks. And their spears to pruning hooks, their swords into plowshares. So what is it that this chapter has to teach us about the kingdom? Zechariah describes a day where Israel will be surrounded by our adversaries. The book of Revelation says that, as you described earlier, when Hasatan is loosed for a season, ultimately the men of the earth will find war again and will surround the city of the Most High and seek its destruction. Mm-hmm. Yah says, don't fear when your adversaries are outnumbering you, outmanning you, when they have superior weaponry. I'm the one who goes before you. We understand and know that Israel is most oftentimes outnumbered, yet they prevail. They overcome more often than they don't. They have won some incredible battles and wars, and it was obviously a supernatural intervention. What about our nation? Our nation is purported to be the strongest military on the face of the earth. I have a brother who is a retired Army colonel, and he said, it's not so much that we are so incredible in our ability and our weaponry, it's just that everyone else is so poorly trained and so bad. Mm-hmm. So we're the best of the worst.
There you go.
In a lot of respects. But is it not true, Mike, that if Yah does not fight for this nation, we're sunk? Even though we have superior technology, weapon, and training than any other nation on the earth, is it still not true that, you know, the lowest rung nation militarily could still overcome us if Yah did not fight for us?
Well, I think we're probably seeing that in America. And you know, I mean, I don't want to get into the conversation that I normally get trapped into there. But, when it comes to Israel, and Israel in the diaspora, by the way, and that's who, you know, we see ourselves as not replacing Israel, but enlarging Israel. And so when we go into battles, it's not about us seeing the giants, but the giants seeing who we truly are in him. That if we are in him, giants should fear. You know, to go to the verse that Cole uses a lot, in Micah chapter 5, that we are to be like lions among, yes, the forest animals. So when you see conspiracies, it's like, to back up just a little bit, in chapter 18, talking about the prophet that spoke presumptuously in my name, and it didn't come to pass. The last words there is, you have nothing to fear from him. That's what it says in David Stearns. You have nothing to fear from him, but the words from him is not there. In Hebrew that I can see, it literally says, the prophet who said it spoke presumptuously, you have nothing to fear. Do you know that we really have nothing to fear?
Wow.
That's when true. It comes to conspiracies, you know, Paul and Silas are in a prison. They have nothing to fear. They began to sing, and the, you know, they might have had a voice like I do, and, you know, it was so bad that it caused the walls to tremble. You know, here's Peter. All of a sudden, he's thrown in prison, and, you know, the door's open, and an angel's leading him out. What do we have to fear? Some trust in horses, some in chariots, but I choose to trust in the Elohim of Israel. And the reason that we can have that audacity, the reason we can make such arrogant statements like that is because even though something in front of you may look like a giant, in his presence, it's a grasshopper.
That's true. That's true. And I'm thinking of the verse, Mike, that is in Yeshayahu, not to call everything a conspiracy that they call a conspiracy. Mm-hmm. I'm looking for it. I'll find it by the time that we get off the air, perhaps. But Yah basically says, stop being wound up with their conspiracies. They will wear you out.
Oh, yeah. If there's anything that's causing those verses, the verses in Daniel to come to pass, these verses are coming to pass on numerous levels, but the enemy will seek to wear down the Zedekim, the saints. If there's anything that's wearing people out, it's the conspiracy theories. All this junk that's going on around there. Does it really make any difference in the, you know, this is that word that I used, the definition that I used the other day in the tabernacle teaching, the word Selah. My favorite definition of Selah is this: take anything that's in front of you, stop and consider it, ponder it in light of eternity.
Yes. Isaiah chapter 8, verse 11, for Yahweh spoke thus to me with a strong hand and instructed me that I should not walk in this way of the people, saying, do not say a conspiracy concerning all that this people call a conspiracy, nor be afraid of their threats, nor be troubled. Yahweh of hosts, him you shall set apart. Let him be your fear, and let him be your dread. And he shall be for a set-apart place, but a stone of stumbling and a rock that makes for falling to both of the houses of Israel, a trap and a snare to the inhabitants of Yisra'im. So if you want to fall, if you want to get overwhelmed, you want to be consumed, go ahead and camp out on the conspiracy doorstep. There's plenty to entertain you. Yah says, don't call conspiracy everything they call a conspiracy. You trust in me instead.
Yeah, we need trust in him and his word. Headlines on Times of Israel right now, U.S. warns no one will be fully pleased by Israeli-Palestinian peace plan because both sides are not going to get everything they want. Let me tell you, I'll make some shocking news to a lot of people. Yahweh is going to get everything he wants.
Absolutely.
There's not going to be anything along the way that he's going to say, well, I think I need to compromise there.